This is Shamira Young, bringing you the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast. Listen in as award-winning photographers discuss how they find opportunities, market their talent, and overcome mistakes to become respected, ever-advancing professional creatives. You'll also hear about their hard-learned lessons, as well as tips for making awesome images. You ready to take your photography business to the next level? Let's do it. And if you haven't already, be sure to pick up your free photography business bundle at prophotographerjourney.com/free-business-bundle. It's 4 weeks of helpful free gifts delivered every 7 days directly to your email inbox. The first thing you'll get is the PDF e-guide titled 12 Common Business Tips and Mistakes Photographers Wish They'd Known Before Going Pro. And believe me, I've made quite a few of these mistakes myself. After that, you'll get a new free gift every week that will help you propel your photography business forward. So head on over to prophotographerjourney.com/free-business-bundle and get yours today. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews I get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. And I want to reach as many people as possible. So again, please leave a review. I really appreciate it. All right, let's get to the interview. Hey everybody, I'm here with Damian Strohmeyer. He's a husband, father, and well-known commercial photographer of 30 years. Damian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shamira.
And you know, I'm just so excited to chat with you. Of course, I've been looking at your work and your website, and I had heard of you before, and I am just pumped. But for the listeners who may not know much about you or recognize your name, could you give us an overview of you, yourself, and just how you ended up where you are today?
Well, I'm a longtime photographer. My first job in photography was started in 1978, and I've been a full-time photographer since I graduated from college in 1980. That odyssey went from being a newspaper photographer in newspapers in Topeka, Kansas, and then in Denver, Colorado, to a long magazine editorial career that lasted about 25 years. I'm still doing some magazine work, still do some editorial work from time to time, probably more on the commercial side now than on the editorial side. But I was had about a 25-year relationship with Sports Illustrated, which I hope will continue. Unfortunately, I've got a contract thing going on right now that doesn't work very well for me. But I was there as a contract photographer, staff photographer, and freelancer for about 25 years. So that was the bulk of my career after newspapers. And then now I'm doing some commercial work. And it seemed to always kind of fall back to the sports realm just because I think I have so much experience in that area.
So what area of photography would you call your expertise, or do you have multiple?
Well, areas? I think I'm a good sports photographer, a good action photographer. I think I do pretty well at portraiture. I have to do a lot of it. I think anybody who's out in the freelance and commercial world has got to have a pretty good ability to handle portraiture, both technically and also personally.
Mm-hmm. So you said that you got your first job as a photographer in 78. And then 1980, did you say you got your first full-time gig as a photographer?
Yeah, I had kind of an interesting entry into sports photography with somebody, as you were talking earlier, who would be a great person to interview. My initial excursion into photography was through a man named Rich Clarkson. Rich hired me in Topeka as a darkroom technician. And he hired me as a darkroom technician because he had had a long progression of people who worked in the darkroom and who really wanted to be photographers. Mm-hmm. And that newspaper at that time had just won a Pulitzer Prize. Brian Lanker had won a Pulitzer Prize there. When I was there, Chris Johns had just won Newspaper Photographer of the Year. And it was a very, very talented staff. And so he wanted somebody who didn't want to be a photographer, who would be content to work in the darkroom and kind of manage the office end of things. I was a business major and I kind of fit that bill. And so I did that for one education year up until the summertime came. And I was past 21 and my parents said, you're on your own now. You're 21. So I had to get a job outside of the newspaper, which was paying, maybe just a little bit over minimum wage. So I had some expertise as a cement finisher. And I took a job in a union town. And Topeka was the first union town I'd ever lived in. So I had to you know, get a union card, and I got a job as a cement finisher. And I went back to college with, you know, just this amazing amount of money in the bank. And so I bought a camera and then progressed very rapidly. That was during my last year of college. And then so by the end of that year, I elected not to go into the business world and become a photographer. And I was fortunate that they were able to make an opening for me in Topeka.
Wow. So what made you decide to buy that camera after you were a cement finisher?
You know, I will not, gloss this over at all. I wanted to go to the sports events. I mean, I played college basketball. I was a free sport, you know, high school athlete. I just have always loved sports and being around sports. And I thought that it would be fun to go to the games and do the stuff. So I started out. That's how I started out. I wanted to do it because, I wanted to go to sports events. And it's kind of ironic because I bought my first lens from a guy who's a National Geographic photographer now, Jim Richardson. And it was a 28mm Vivitar wide angle lens. My second lens I bought was from Chris Johns, who was at one time the editor of National Geographic. He still is the editor of National Geographic, I believe. And it was a 400-4.5. So I had two lenses, a 28 and a 400, kind of like a very wide range there. But I wanted to do that. And that was kind of how we ended up doing it. And then I remember, you know, going from a camera with no motor to a winder and then finally getting a motor drive. That was like, you know, a huge thing. I went through all these progressions in the camera industry.
How cool. And, you know, while you were chatting, I was actually looking at your portfolio, which I had looked at before at your site, DamianStormeyer.com, and you have some amazing shots. There's one of Kobe Bryant, and yeah, he's just taking it to the hoop. It's pretty awesome. How cool.
Well, I had a great opportunity at Sports Illustrated. I was there during some wonderful years when they were publishing big magazines, big budgets, and a lot of opportunities. So I was able to milk that for a lot of years. It was a really great experience for me. I could never take those back. I don't think it'll ever be like that again, probably. So, you know, I was there at a good time. Happy to have had the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. When an opportunity presents itself, you definitely, you know, want to take it. It's a good thing that you didn't shy away from it, or, you know, some people let opportunities pass them by.
When I started out in newspapers, I remember going to talk to, you know, my mentor, Rich Clarkson. I went into him and said, you know, I'd really like to try this whole photography thing, if we can work it out somehow. And I'm like a 22-year-old, second semester senior going in to talk to him, about to graduate with a degree in business with an emphasis in marketing, management, and finance. And I'm saying, I want to take a job. But bear in mind that I had jobs on the string. I know I had one from 3M in Minneapolis and one from, I think, Xerox sales jobs that paid significantly more than what the Topeka Capital Journal offered me for my first job, which was $160 a week in 1980.
Wow.
But it worked out great. You know, we progressed really fast. I followed Rich then out to Denver. Rich went to the Denver Post, and I followed him out there. And another great place that I hit at just the right time. They had a lot of budget, a lot of money. I had a lot of opportunities there as well. But also, I use that as a stepping stone to Sports Illustrated. I very definitely had Sports Illustrated in my sights and used the years in Denver to really fine-tune my skills and try to get my photography, sports photography, to the level that it needed to be to work there.
And you mentioned a couple times, Damian, that you were a business major. Now, one thing that I found in this podcast, when I'm talking to photographers who have business experience, usually the two go hand in hand and it works in their benefit. For you, did your business knowledge play any role in helping you succeed as a photographer?
When I was on staff at Sports Illustrated, which was 14 years, and then bear in mind, I also had some staff years in the newspaper business. So a great deal of my career was spent as a staff employee, probably 22 of those 35 years. Mm-hmm. But I also freelanced in the early 90s, clear up till 98 when I went on staff at SI. Now I've been freelancing again now for 3.5 years. And I have to tell you, like, the business end of it is definitely the part that you have to work the hardest at. I mean, even if your photographic skills are there, you know, you're still running a business. I mean, I just got done with my end of the year marketing project, you know, which involved, you know, sending stuff to clients that I've been working with in the last year. And, you know, it's like it never ends. I mean, that stuff never ends. You go from project to project to project, and being able to not only market yourself, but also run a professional business, you know, keep up on invoicing and billing and making sure you're up to date on any of your personal bills and your equipment is up to date, all those kinds of things. I run it just like a business, and that's what you have to do to be successful.
Absolutely. And I think it's something that many aspiring photographers don't realize initially. I know I certainly didn't. Years ago, you know, I got my first camera and then I started freelancing and I just had these stars in my eyes, like I'm going to be taking pictures all the time. And it was a hard reality when I ignored the business side of things, marketing, even just keeping track of my numbers. That really comes back to bite you. And, you know, that was one of the main reasons why I started this podcast, was to talk about the business side of things.
Yeah, I don't think you can emphasize it enough. I mean, I think the market is tightened up, obviously, you know, and while your photographic skills may still get you hired, if you can't put together a good estimate, if you can't bid a job the right way, if you don't have the right people skills to market yourself the right way, you know, it's not going to matter how good your photographic skills are. You still got to be able to be perceived as a professional in every regard. And certainly that the better tuned your business skills are, the more likely you are to be perceived that way.
Definitely, definitely. And a little bit later in this interview, we're going to circle back to the business side of things. But first, tell us, now, how do you get yourself inspired for a photo shoot? Or in your case, when there's action happening in front of you, you know, how do you get inspired to capture certain moments?
Aren't we all inspired the same way, by the fear of failure? I mean, that's,
that's a good one.
So, yeah, I think we're all motivated by the same thing, right? Fear of failure. You know, and I think that's fairly accurate. I mean, I think we're all, you know, trying to please whoever it is you're working for, client, art director, you know, creative director, subject, you know, all those things. We're all trying to work to please those various things. So I never feel satisfied with the job when I'm done. I always see things I could have done better. I haven't taken a perfect picture. I know I can always make it better. And I think that motivates you a lot. I always want to feel like I'm improving. I always want to feel like when I do speaking presentations, that I do quite a few for Canon, where I do educational speaking things. And I always try to have something in that show that's up to date. Because you're talking to students, you know, like they don't care about pictures that are 10 years old. Most people don't care about pictures that are 10 years old, no matter how great they are, no matter how iconic they are. They want to see what you're doing right now. And that's, you know, part of it too, is I want to constantly be putting out material that's going to promote me, going to make my brand better, going to make me in demand.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned that you're never satisfied with your photos, which I find that hard to believe, looking at your portfolio. But in your opinion, then, what makes a great photo stand out from, I guess, the tons of average photos out there?
I think the drama is really where you're looking for. In portraiture, it's more capturing the essence of the subject. I never really thought about it that way, but I did a portrait project a couple of years ago and I photographed an artist, and he put it, I thought, very, very accurately when he said, "I love the picture you took of me." He said, "When I look in the mirror, I don't see myself anymore. I see that photograph." Well, wow. Obviously that's something that, you know, you've gotten to the heart of the subject there. That's, you know, in a portrait, that's a really key thing. But also, you know, I think, you know, being in a lot of editorial photography, and really, frankly, in commercial photography as well, you're telling a story. I always say I'm a storyteller. That's what I do. And I'm waiting on a call a day to set up something I'm shooting tomorrow. And I want to know going in what that story is. And then if I can bring the graphic elements and some drama into it, you know, with some other factors like lighting or position or camera position, you know, then, you know, well, that'll be good as well. But you still got to communicate what the story is about or what the product is about if you're in the commercial world.
And, you know, that's something that I've heard mentioned time and time again, when we're really trying to get down to the heart of the matter, it is the story. And I would say that's even true with portraiture. You know, you're capturing the essence, as you mentioned it, and in a way, the story of that person. And the same goes for, you know, action photography, or really with, I would say, just about any type of photography, there's always this narrative that's present there. And as photographers, we need to be aware that we're trying to capture that narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's all about the storytelling element. And I know that, just like you, I hear the same thing over and over to people. And I never thought about it so much as when I was working entirely in editorial, just because it was ingrained. You couldn't think of it anywhere else. Now, with portraiture, and also some of the commercial side of things, I try to think more about storytelling because it's not as ingrained. The ideas aren't as obvious, and particularly in commercial photography where, you know, things go in and out of vogue, styles go in and out of vogue. So, you know, you often are trying to make sure that you're not shooting stylistically to something that's not telling the story in the right manner. To tell the story in the right manner and let some style come in through some other element.
Yeah. And you know what's funny, Damien? You said you didn't think about it much years ago. I didn't either until I started this podcast, as far as telling a story behind a photo. And, you know, I was shooting years before I started the podcast. And for me, it was always just, when I got this feeling, I call it this feeling in my belly or this feeling in my gut when I take a good photo. That's when I knew I was onto something, but it's taken me years to really verbalize that process of what I was doing. And it's been a huge help actually talking to awesome experienced photographers like yourself, because you guys really put into words, you know, what years ago I couldn't. So, and you know, with this podcast, I'm hoping it will also help our listeners who are aspiring photographers be more aware of those things as opposed to taking years to figure it out like I did.
Yeah, well, you know, photography is intuitive. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But it's intuitive only to the point that your preparation, you know, preparation meets technical skill to give you success. So while it's like nice to say, oh, I'm going to do a portrait and a rainbow is going to pop up in the background. Well, that's, you know, that's opportunistic thinking. I mean, I hope that works for you. However, I think you may want to have a plan B and, you know, something that may help you also execute that photograph without depending on that kind of serendipity.
Preparation plus technical skills equals success. Okay, I'm writing that down right now.
Yeah, you know, nice. I probably don't have that right. If you probably check a quote thing, there's an exact quote. I can't remember exactly what it is right now, but it's like preparation plus technical skill, you know, in some manner or another foster success.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up for sure. Now, next, Damien, I do want to touch on the tools of the trade. I don't believe that the gear that you use makes the photographer. Not at all. However, I would like to touch on the typical go-to gear that you use for your shoots. Would you share that with us?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a really, I think I'm a good technician. I think I understand lights. I mean, when I show my book a lot, I hear from art directors and creative people and you know, designers and stuff. And they always say, wow, this looks like it wasn't even in Photoshop. And I said, well, that's the goal. We don't want it to look like it's been in Photoshop. I want it to come out of the camera as clean and as close to what I was trying to capture as possible. So in that regard, I don't consider myself like a tech head who's like, you know, after every single piece of gear and every single piece of post-production equipment, any of that kind of stuff. It's fairly simple, but my work is, I think, pretty clean in how I do it. So I'm not a big gear hound, although if you're in sports photography, you are kind of a gear hound. I mean, it kind of takes a lot of equipment. But my go-to camera is an EOS 1DX, and that's, you know, what I've had since that came out. And I use that camera exclusively. I have a few of them. And, you know, my lenses are, I think, really standard photojournalism kind of lenses, 16-35, 24-70, 70-200. And then when you get in the sports end of things, I do own some, you know, some serious long lenses too, 200 F2, 300 2.8, 400 2.8. My 600 F4 is for sale if anybody out there would like to buy it. but yeah, I do have some telephoto gear that we use from time to time.
And you know, Damien, one thing that I like to ask everyone is, what is your favorite photography accessory other than your camera and why?
We should go back a little bit on the camera gear probably because, you know, really in commercial photography, you're also talking about lighting equipment as well. So, you know, my portable lighting gear, battery powered units are Hensels, the German manufacturer, you know, great stuff. You know, I have a 600 watt second pack and a 1200 watt second pack. And I use those a lot because I do a lot of outside portraiture, a lot with athletes, obviously doing a lot outside. And then I have Dynalite, you know, for the rest of my gear. And then when I have to, and I need fast flash duration, I rent Profoto stuff, You know, it's great stuff. It's all great stuff. In terms of like accessories, if I had to say what's the number one accessory, well, it depends, I suppose, on what you consider an accessory. But I have to tell you, and I'm not saying this because of your name, but my Shamira light box is like, you know, that's, they're pretty damn good. I mean, you know, and you know, Shamira started in Denver when, or in Silver Plume rather, when I was in Denver. So I have one of the original Shamira boxes downstairs. It's 30 years old. I bought it in 1985. But yeah, I think the whole ability to bend your light is something that's changed significantly since I became a photographer. Umbrella was really the only option you had other than bouncing some light when we started out. When Shamira started out doing, you know, boxes, and then Silver Plume followed them, I think. And then, you know, Westcott jumped in and they were doing stuff. And I think now you have some tremendous options about what you can do, whether it be a standard box, an egg crate front, you know, all these light bending accessories, parabolic light, light boxes now. There's lots of things. You know, I have that Elenchrome Octobank, another really great piece of equipment, you know, to use in portraiture.
I approve. That was a good answer. Yes. The Shamira products. Very good.
But that's Shimera. But you know, we'll call it close enough, you know. How many times, you know, I have an agent that would get double every time they misspelled my name, which is, you know, pretty easy to do. So she must feel the same pain, right?
I'm used to it all the time. Oh, yes. Or people trying to correct me on the pronunciation of my own name. I get that, too. So anyway, next, Damien, could you share with us briefly what your post-production workflow is like after a shoot?
Sure. It's pretty simple. It won't take long. My workflow is really basic. It is camera to card, card to ingest and photo mechanic, edit in photo mechanic, caption in photo mechanic, output to Photoshop for finishing. And, you know, that's it. You know, then, you know, a save obviously in, you know, various forms so that I've got the image backed up and, you know, on various drives and in various ways. But my goal actually for 2016, one of my goals for 2016 is to incorporate Lightroom into my workflow, probably at the expense of Photoshop. And that would be mostly because I use Photoshop in a very basic manner.
You know, okay.
Just basically level curves and light sharpening, you know, cropping. That's it. I don't do much else. You know, well, I hope I don't have to do much else. I do occasionally have to do more than that, but not often.
Yeah, you know, I think you'll like it. I'm a Lightroom user myself, and I actually started using Lightroom as a result of this podcast when people recommended it over and over again. There's going to be a little bit of, you know, I guess as you're transitioning, getting used to it. But yeah, I think that'll go
that's
well.
One of my, I've actually talked to a couple of people about, you know, taking some Lightroom courses and try to make that transition over. I'm also one of those guys that because my Photoshop is usage is so basic, I am still running Photoshop 5. So I need to be in the Creative Cloud here anyway. So I had to make a move anyway. So likely that I will make that move probably in the spring.
It'll save you time. It will. Once you get over the learning curve, oh yeah. Especially if you're using Photoshop or something basic. For sure.
Yeah.
Well, next, Damien, let's get into the photography business discussion part of this interview, which is always my favorite thing to talk about. Because for me personally, it's one of the things that I've struggled the most with. And it's true with a lot of our listeners as well. So could you share with us, especially now that you're freelancing, what's the most challenging aspect of being in business for yourself?
I think the marketing end of it is definitely the biggest challenge. You know, I'm using a marketing service now. I started out trying to do some of that on my own. Realized that the marketing for commercial is a lot different than marketing for editorial. Editorial is a little more instantaneous. In other words, like you know, make a phone call, drop an email, do a mail or something. Somebody reacts and they, because of the immediacy of publication, you tend to get work right away. You know, I go back to the days in which you shopped a portfolio in New York, you know, you went in for a week and you called on people and, you know, then you got back home and, you know, the phone rang and you went out and did jobs for them. It's obviously far different than that now with the internet and your ability to publish your website online where people can look at it. That changed a lot that way. So marketing becomes even more critical because everybody has their website out there. So I think the whole marketing end of it is the biggest challenge. And how you approach that, you know, there's any of a number of ways to do it. I have my own theories about it, but certainly they wouldn't be exclusive to me, and nor would I say that they're the best or, you know, most proven. But I do think that the marketing end of it is the biggest challenge and probably the most critical thing beyond your ability to produce, you know, top level images to inhibiting your success.
And you know, your answer actually takes us to the next question I have for you. So what have you found to be the most effective techniques for getting new assignments and projects? What's worked
for you?
Well, I
always want to get people, you always want to get people face to face. If you can get people face to face, if you've got good people skills, your odds are obviously far better, you know, of getting work. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, getting face to face is obviously difficult. So, you know, I have a variety of ways that I market, and it basically kind of works. I use agency access, a database service, as my marketing, you know, one of my marketing tools. And they do 4 email blasts a year, which, frankly, I think are largely unsuccessful. I mean, I think it's an exposure thing only, which is why I continue to do it, is that you just, your name pops out there one more time. Mm-hmm. I think it's largely unsuccessful in terms of like return for work. I mean, but it's all a guessing game. All exposure is good exposure. That's why I'm talking to you today, right? You know, exposure is always good. So email blast followed by mailers. We call that list in. We talk about clients that we're going after, clients who responded to the email in some manner who might be potential clients, and we mail to them. We do mailers to them 4 times a year. And then the agency access, the service I have, does 20 telemarketing calls then after that. This was an area where even if I could handle those first 2 time-wise, doing email blast, building list, doing email blast, and then following up with mailers, even if I could handle that time-wise on my own, I would not be very successful in the telemarketing end because I'm not good at that kind of stuff. So this is a classic case in the telemarketing end where having somebody who is paid and that's their job and that's their expertise to do it, I think is a good thing. One of the mistakes I think that people make, and certainly I've made it, I think every photographer's made it, is don't take your current clients for granted. You know, like your current group of clients, people, you know, that you want to keep those people happy. And yes, bear in mind that particularly in commercial photography, work goes back a long ways. You may get a job from somebody, and then you may not hear a word from them at all for 2-3 years. And then all of a sudden they're back in the picture. You don't ever want to lose contact with them. If somebody has hired you and the shoot has been successful, they've expressed interest in you, you want to keep marketing to them. Same way with people who come in and want you to bring their book in. You know, if they want you to bring your book in and they call you, then that's somebody who's interested in working with you. And you need to keep that in mind and you know, build your marketing accordingly. So it's a combination of factors. It's always a combination of factors. You know, your prospects within your own industry. I keep a nice relationship with some production companies that do video because oftentimes an art director who's on a video shoot will say, well, we don't have a still photographer. You know anybody? And you know what? I've gotten some nice jobs that way. And so you know, it's like, again, it's like part of it is you have to have the goods. You have to have the material to back up what you are trying to market. But a lot of it's persistence and a lot of it's consistency, which is real important in marketing too. That's why we're talking about the agency access stuff. It's consistency too makes the difference, you know, doing it so people expect it at certain times or are not surprised when they see it and when it comes in at a certain time.
Hey, photographers, I want to pause and take a quick second to tell you about the New York Institute of Photography at nyip.edu. It's an online school for students who want to learn photography from the comfort of their own home on their own time. Not only is the New York Institute of Photography the world's largest online photography school, but they've been in business for over 100 years. Yes, you heard that right, 100 years. Originally established in 1910, they got their start as a brick-and-mortar school. Fast forward to today, and the New York Institute of Photography is now an online school where you can study anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. Every student gets a personal pro photographer mentor who will review your photos and help you improve. You can choose from 9 online courses based on your skill level and area of interest. They have courses on digital photography fundamentals, wedding photography, travel photography, photojournalism, marketing, and more.
To view the free course catalog and daily specials, check out the New York Institute of Photography at www.nyip.edu. Again, that's www.nyip.edu.
So how do you keep in touch with your past clients?
Told you, I just got ready. I'm sending my holiday gift out right now. You know, so, you know, we're, and I want to have a nice image on that, that some people say, wow. And I often use not necessarily an image that represents my work so much. It may just be an image that I just really like. Mm-hmm. And it may be pertinent to the holidays. It may not. It may be pertinent to something that's happening in the news. I will say it's not a picture of Donald Trump, you know, but I mean, like, you know, I'm going to try to give them something that's aesthetically pleasing. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to try to give them a little reminder that has my name on it that may manage to find its way onto their desk in some manner or onto their bulletin board or whatever I decide to do for that promotion piece that year to keep it going. But I also, if I don't hear from a client that I'm used to working for regularly, like you'd have repeat work for them like two or three or four times a year maybe, then mm-hmm. I'll drop them an email. Say, hey, Joe, haven't heard from you in a while. What's going on? And Joe may say, haven't had anything in your area. Or Joe may say, yeah, it hasn't worked out, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever it might be. But you want to keep following up because if they've hired you and you've had no reason to, if you've given them no reason not to rehire you, then, you know, you want to keep persisting.
And actually, initially, you mentioned at the beginning of this question that an email blast is sent out to you or sent out for you on your behalf. I was curious, are you sending those out to prospects or are they past clients or is it a list that you've compiled?
It's a database list that we go over, a marketing consultant at Agency Access. We go over it with them and, you know, okay. Like what they think makes sense. Frankly, they make most of the decisions on that kind of stuff. They take my body of work, say, okay, who is the most pertinent to? They do take my input, particularly when about mailers and telemarketing. Because we have a definite vision about what kind of client we're going after, and I may have you know, more particularly locally more pertinent input maybe than what they do.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great move, by the way, as far as getting help with those areas. You talked about how you're not great with telemarketing, and so you have someone doing that for you. And I think that that is an excellent move when you realize where your strengths are and focusing on those and letting other people handle those areas where you're not so strong.
One of the things, it's a little hard giving up control. You know, like that's one of the things that you battle as a photographer, you battle as a person, is giving up control. Now, when I was laid off at Sports Illustrated after, you know, 14 years as a staff photographer in 2012. And I had to start from scratch and say, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this? One of the very first things I did was hire a life coach, a person who was an expert in the photo community, a former art buyer for a major ad agency who's now a life coach. So she knew photography. She knew counseling, which, you know, trust me, I needed plenty of handholding, still do. You know, Elaine Davis is her name. And she came in and one of the things she said is, Damien, you got to get some help. You can't do all this yourself. And slowly but surely, you know, like a lot of the things that she was talking about 3 years ago are all totally incorporated into what I do. You can't do it all. You know, you can't, if you try to do it all you'll do is wear yourself out and not be successful. You want to save yourself for your creative effort. That's what you do. That's why people hire you. So while I do most of my business stuff myself, if mm-hmm. I were to get, I would say, frankly, about 20% more business for me than I would even have to start farming out the invoicing and estimating and all that into it too, just because I don't think I can handle it myself.
Very nice. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And it's great that you realize that, you know, like you said, it can be hard to give up control or power or something that you're used to handling yourself. But, you know, it really sounds like it's moving your business forward at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I have to think it's allocation of resources, allocation of your time. So, you know, I just came back. Both of my adult children were home for the holidays. You know, one's a college student, one's out on their own, you know, in the working world. And they were both home for a couple of weeks. Well, during that period of time, I want to allocate my resources to them. You know, I'm allocating my resources tonight to my youngest daughter's basketball game. That's where my most important priority is. But you have to make those divisions. You have to make divisions between family time and business time. You have to make divisions within your business about what makes sense what can you handle easily on your own, and what could an expert do that may not only save you time, but in the long run may also save you money, because it may allow you to focus more creatively on other areas like marketing, or maybe in other areas of technically with your photography.
Excellent. So true. So true. You know, my next question for you, you kind of already answered, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Now, earlier you mentioned that one of the mistakes that you see photographers make is that they take their current clients for granted. Is that one of the most common mistakes, or is there another, I guess, what's the most common mistake that you see aspiring and professional photographers make today?
Well, you're going to, I always make this distinction always in saying, I have a business plan and it works for me. I should not be in the business of criticizing other people's business plans. Everybody has different needs and everybody has different goals. And, you know, I don't think that it's up to me to be criticizing other people's, methods of running their business. I do think that people underestimate the marketing end of the business. I do think that people look too often to obvious clients. In other words, I think there are a lot of clients out there that you are looking for photography that need to discover those. And that's where your marketing becomes critical, you know, where you have to have, you know, people working for you to try to find those clients. I mean, that's always the key, you know, and rarely anymore are you going to find a client that doesn't have a photographer. That's when it becomes critical that you find clients that may not be, you know, as happy with their current situation and maybe looking to make a change, or they may be looking to go a different direction and you've got the right skills to take them in that direction. So in terms of like, is that a common mistake that people make, taking their current clients for granted? I believe it is. Yes, I think that is the case. I think that having been a one client photographer for a lot of my career, even in the 90s, my freelance career, I know that it's very easy to do that. That being said, is that the most common thing? I don't know. There's a lot of people. We're photographers. We make all kinds of mistakes. We're not just, like if I had was like, you know, you mean you want a top 100 list of mistakes? No, I don't. There's a lot of mistakes that can be made in the business end of photography. But, you know, every person has a different business model and you need to learn to adapt, you know, yourself to a business model that works for you.
I like this question because with the answers, there are always common denominators, you know, and it's not so much trying to criticize anyone as it's more trying to make our listeners aware of the common mistakes that people are making out there. And I mean, marketing has come up again and again.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, there's lots of things going on out there. I think one of the things, too, that a lot of young photographers, a lot of old photographers make a mistake. And that's, you know, you got to watch those contracts. You got to be on top of, you know, what's a good deal and what's a bad deal. And also, I, of course, am, you know, pretty well established in the field and feel like I've made a lot of good decisions about things. And like I said, I'm not going to criticize somebody for signing a contract or for making a deal that I think is not a good one. But you have to understand that when you make a deal that's a bad deal, that or maybe not a bad deal, one that is below industry standard, you're driving the market down. And the market's in difficult enough shape as it is. We don't need to drive it down any further. And that's where it becomes, you know, like I think you get a lot of people who are in the business of photography, guys like John Harrington or Todd Bigelow now out in Los Angeles is doing a lot of this too, is they're breaking this down in a cost of doing business so that you really understand what you should be charging. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't really understand that. There's a lot of factors that, you know, go into that. Like, you know, like people are thinking obvious, like, okay, I got to have a camera, I got to have lighting, I got to have this, I got to have that. But maybe they're not thinking about 401ks or I guess SEPs, IRAs, you know, like for independent people, or maybe they're not thinking about long-term care, which, you know, like there's a lot of factors involved in like lifestyle and what you need as a person that also go hand in hand with those things you need as a business person.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it's taken me years to even realize that, you know, as far as putting away for retirement, you know, when I stepped into it, I just kind of, to be honest, started charging the lowest amount possible, just starting in photography. And I see a lot of people do this and, you know, you're trying to build your portfolio, but after a while you do have to start charging something that's more aligned with the industry, which does help the industry as a whole, but it also helps you with the lifestyle that you want to live ultimately.
Right. I think one of the things too is like, you know, what if you, you know, I'm not going to pick a number out here, but like, let's just pick a number out. This is illustration, not actual number. But if you take a job and you take it and you say, you bid $100, you understand that now you're a $100 photographer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you set your own standard.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that people don't understand is that like they think, well, I'll charge very little now. And then I'll charge a little more and I'll charge a little more. And then when I get in the big leagues, I'll charge a lot. Well, probably not. You know, you're going to need to be close to the industry standard when you start out, because if you're not, people know what you charge. I mean, they're going to look at your book and they're going to see who you work for. And they're going to say, well, let's find out what he did for X client. Oh, we charged him this amount. Okay. Well, he's not going to work for me for any, you know, more than that. So, you know, you have to keep those in mind when you're making business decisions.
Absolutely. And tell us, Damien, what's the one thing you wish you knew way back when, before you stepped into photography professionally?
There's a lot of things I have a business background, didn't really think about being a photographer. I'm going to use a quote here from my friend Kevin Gilbert, who is a principal in the company Mylio, the photo archiving, industry. But
cool guy.
Kevin has a great quote in which he says, I became a photographer because it was fun. And then Adobe came along and made it work. So I do think that my friend Robert Seal is another guy, somebody you should talk to, frankly, if you have the opportunity, a commercial photographer in Houston. You don't realize how much time you spend sitting in front of a computer when you're a photographer. Not just the post-production, correspondence, marketing, all this kind of stuff. And it's like you feel more like a computer technician sometimes than you do like a photographer. So if I had known years ago that digital would change photography in the manner that it has, then, you know, that would have been helpful. I don't know that I would have necessarily not become a photographer, because I certainly still enjoy the communication process with photography. But that has been a real game changer, and that's the amount of time that you have to spend in front of a computer trying to run a business and also manipulate your images. And not manipulate, that's the wrong word, finish your images.
Mm-hmm. And that's where workflow really comes into play.
Yep.
At that point, an efficient workflow. Yeah, you know, as far as marketing yourself, and but also when you finish a photo shoot too, when you have all those images to go through. Excellent. Well, Damien, we're actually coming up towards the end of the interview, which makes me sad because I feel like I could talk for hours, which is how I usually feel with every person that I interview.
Well, that's good.
Could you tell us, is there a particular photography resource, a tool, course, book, whatever, that you would recommend to our listeners who are trying to kickstart their businesses?
Oh, I think they all should take the Damien Strohmeyer workshops. I mean, that would be my number one recommendation if you really want to be a great sports photographer, for sure. No, I don't know. I don't know that there's a one single resource out there. I mean, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of wonderful education things out there right now. I just think you have to identify what you want to do and take the steps to get there. One of the things that I have always done as a person and as a photographer is goal setting and understanding the steps to take to get to those goals. And that's, people can make a lot of goals, but if they're not obtainable goals, all you end up is being frustrated. So if I had to give like one piece of advice about how to make things go forward, and this isn't like endorsing anything, because I don't know that I know that there is one single thing, but I do know that if you can learn to set reachable goals and understand how to reach those goals in logical, progressive means so that you can see success or failure, you know, you're going to be a lot better off when you get done with the year, you're going to be able to look back and say, I did this right, or I did this right, or I did this wrong, I did this wrong. And that's real important in terms of moving forward. Everyone does it. I do it. I'm in the middle of evaluating 2015 right now. And, you know, it's like it's really important to understand what path you're taking and how you're moving things forward from a business standpoint and from a creative standpoint.
For sure. I actually had just posted about goal setting on Photo Focus. And one of the things is it's so important to have measurable goals and results, and having it broken down even into bite-sized pieces. I know that's important for me anyway. And, you know, if you have this huge goal, say you're just starting off, you know, as a photographer and you want to shoot for Sports Illustrated, you know, writing down the goal to shoot for Sports Illustrated, that's great. But you have to put in the steps to get to that point bit by bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like you have to understand how to get there. And that's, you know, you have to take the step to get there. You know, one of the things, going back to, what I was talking about, my life coach, Elaine Davis, one of the things she said, I've always kept on my desk a list of things that need to get done. You know, like check them off and cross them off, whatever it is. You know, it's like, it's always kind of a joke because, you know, all my kids do it now too. And so, you know, they put their things they have to get done during the day. And then, you know, I write on the bottom of their list, you know, give dad a back rub, you know, dad needs a foot rub, you know, whatever it is, kind of joke about it. But, Elaine said, Damien, you got to get more organized than that. You're going to need to get a calendar going all the time and need to have calendars for work and calendars for personal stuff and just to make yourself more organized. And she's totally right. Among the many things that she was totally right about. And that is like, being organized is another part of that whole goal setting progress. You can't move forward if you aren't organized.
Yes.
So one of the things that Elaine Davis, was my life coach for, still is my life coach. We don't meet as often as we did, but one of the things she said, you have to be organized and you have to use that organization so that it will allow you to meet these various goals that you have. And I found that to be really interesting. She said, you need to get more organized. And so we have calendars for personal, we have calendars for work. And all steps into stuff. I reviewed that material the other day, like from 3 years ago when I started doing it. And it's just remarkable that I could survive it all 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. I had very limited computer skills, were very, very primitive. The things I was working on 3 years ago are things that now, like, I totally take for granted. I mean, it's like my ability to function as a freelance photographer is definitely 200 or 300% greater than it was 3 years ago. So I guess if there's a lesson there is that, like, if you're taking the right path on your goals, you'll get there. It's just a question of, being patient, setting reachable goals.
Do you think you would have gotten as far as where you are today, do you think you would have progressed as quickly if you had not set any goals 3 years ago?
Well, that's a little bit of a tricky question. I'm trying to be realistic about this. I did have, when I was, became a freelance photographer again 3 years ago, I did have a very strong body of work. I mean, mm-hmm. I was, like a seasoned photographer, pretty good technical skills, and, a pretty good body of work. Now, I had to adapt that body of work a lot because I didn't have a lot of portraiture. I didn't have a lot of feature work in there because that was what I had been doing for the previous 25 years. But I understood what needed to happen to make that go forward. And I've worked very hard to do that. So I increased the amount of portraiture I was doing. I did projects on my own, things like that. So that's a little bit of a tricky question. I mean, I had goals in mind about what I wanted to do, but I also understand that, like, not everyone, can say, I'm Damien Strohmeyer, and I saw on your website you had 70 covers of Sports Illustrated. Well, that's like that's a pretty big trump card. That's like, that certainly helps. I mean, it's like, it may not even be pertinent to the job you're talking about, but it doesn't hurt you any. So that's a little bit of a tricky question. I think the goal setting is an important part of it. I think my life body of work is also an important part of it.
Yeah, for sure. And, I think goal setting, just in general, especially for people who may not have a portfolio as extensive as yours, I think it's crucial. I think it's key. I know for myself, absolutely, where I tend to get distracted by any and every little thing or every shiny object that I come across. I have to lay out my goals step by step. And for me, I'm an Evernote junkie. And so I lay out my daily goals every day in Evernote. And then I have my weekly goals, my monthly goals, quarterly, and then for the year. And I find that if I don't stick to that, then I'm just all over the place where I could easily waste 3 years, 5 years bouncing around without goals. But if I have goals that are measurable and objectives, then that helps keep me on track. And I think for most of our audience listening today, it's important to get some kind of system where you set your goals and make them, I like bite-sized goals that lead to bigger goals where you can achieve them and actually see results in your business.
Yeah, you're definitely, we're on the same page on that for sure. The one thing, I know we're running out of time here and I actually am running out of time as well, but the one thing I would just like to paraphrase, the great writer Mark Twain, who I think it was Mark Twain who said, who reported in a novel he wrote that someone was dead and they weren't really dead. And they said, reports of my death have been greatly overrated. what's going on in the photographic industry right now is everybody wants to write it off. And I think that's a very easy thing to do, is just give up. And that's, what's happened with a lot of photographers. I give up. I can't do it anymore. It's mm-hmm. never going to be as good as it was. Well, you know, I have to say that, like, I find that not to be the case, and that, like, you know, my business has improved every year that I've been back out. It's on par with anything I did financially with my Sports Illustrated years. So there's definitely work out there. I think it's, I think whether you're, instead of giving up, you may want to reinvent your goals and reinvent your marketing strategy so that you can capture some of that work that's out there and price yourself accordingly. Do the business end of it as well.
For sure. That's a great quote to end our interview. Reports of my death have been, is it exaggerated or is
greatly
it overrated?
Exaggerated. Reports of greatly my death have been greatly exaggerated. So it's like, you know, like the, you know, it's like reports of the death of photography have been greatly exaggerated. I think it's not, I don't really think it's quite as bad as what it is. Now, maybe I've been fortunate. Maybe 2016 will be, you know, you'll find me with a tin can selling pencils on the corner. But, you know, I hope not. I think I've, you know, taken some preparations to make sure that doesn't happen. I think it's important to be able to evolve all the time. You have to evolve your business every year. It's different this year than it was last year, and it's going to be different the year after that.
Absolutely. Well, our final question, Damien.
Sure.
But it's our final one, but one of the most important, I believe. Tell us where we can find you online.
Well, I'm all over the internet. I mean, Google, you know, Damien and photography, and you're going to come up with pages of, you know, minute trivia. But the best way to reach me is DamienStrohmeyer.com, www.DamienStrohmeyer.com. But yeah, I'm on the internet. My website's on the internet. And of course, also, again, I'm very easy to reach just by a Google search for that matter. I'm out there. I'm easy to find. Have a name like mine. It's very easy to be unique.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Well, just thank you so much, Damien, for chatting with us. We really appreciate it. And I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Good deal, Shamir. Anytime.
Are you getting ready for your first photo shoot and need to learn some common mistakes to avoid? Or maybe you need to learn how to communicate with your clients and grow your business through email marketing. Or perhaps you're just getting started with your website and you're trying to figure out this WordPress hosting stuff. When you're in business for yourself, it's a lifelong learning process for sure. And that's why I've set up the Pro Photographer Journey Resource Center. You can learn all of this and more through my free and paid self-paced online courses. Each course focuses on these individual topics and is designed to hold your hand every step of the way and help you learn how to run your business more successfully. You'll also find a host of other tools in the Resource Center that are useful for running your photography business, many of which I use myself. From email marketing tools to forming an LLC for your business to cool image editing software, it's there. And wherever possible, I include coupon codes to these online services so that you can grab a discount. So check it out at prophotographerjourney.com/resource center. That's prophotographerjourney.com/resource center.